When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to The Last Word on Spurs here. Thank you for downloading us during this difficult time as we continue to fight and battle COVID-19. We're taking a trip back to the late 80s, early 90s, where we've now got another Tottenham Hotspur legend joining us on The Last Word on Spurs. Delighted to also say, firstly, back alongside me is Jason McGovern. Jace, how are you keeping? How are you coping?
All right, mate. Enjoying a bit of gardening leave and got a few days of sunshine, which makes life a bit easier. But like everyone else, just hoping that we're out of this as soon as possible, mate.
Yep, amen to that, amen. We're delighted to welcome, as I said in the intro, a Tottenham Hotspur legend to The Last Word on Spurs. Spurs through and through, playing some of our best sides we've seen over the last 30 or so years. Started as an attacking midfielder, matured into a holding midfielder. 277 appearances, 22 goals between 1984 to 1998. Part of the Spurs side that won the FA Cup in 91 and also helped the club achieve a third place finish in the old Division 1 in 1989-90 season. We've got David Howes with us. David, how are you and how are you keeping?
Very good. Thanks, Ricky. I'm all right.
Lovely. Fantastic. Dave, like I said, thank you for joining us. I know it's difficult circumstances at the moment. A family, all good from your end at the moment?
Yes. Yeah, I've got a four-year-old who's obviously off school. So it's interesting schooling him here at home. Got two older children as well, who are ones at university, who's obviously back at home. And so, yes, it's a busy time, even though obviously not going into work, still got lots of things to be cracking on with. So, yeah, they're busy days. I'm ready for bed at the end of them, to be honest.
What stage, David, do you show the boy the 91 Cup final? How many years before you...
Yeah, he's getting gradually introduced to bits and pieces. That somebody put something on Twitter the other day where I scored a couple of goals and he did that once, so I made sure he saw that.
And he's got his Spurs kit already?
Of course, yeah. He was very lucky, actually. He came to the last game at White Hart Lane when he was just two. And at the end, he was running around on the pitch. Darren, the groundsman, was kind enough to let him have a run around. And he did a similar thing after the Inter Forever Legends game. He came down onto the pitch at the end as well and had a little trot around. So he's been very lucky so far.
Bless him. You might get a game by the time we get back, David. Well, listen, let's start, David, with your fabulous Spurs career. Growing up in Guildford, who did you support and who were the players that you hoped to emulate growing up into football?
Well, I was a Spurs fan. My dad was a Spurs fan, so we had no choice, my brother and I. He took us to our first game in 1974 at home against Coventry. It was a 1-1 draw and Martin Peters got the goal. And I remember being in the enclosure in the old West Stand, just along from the tunnel where the players used to come out around the corner. And I remember Ralph Coates being sub and warming up right in front of us. And I was trying to get an autograph and he was too busy, so he didn't sign. But that was our team. And obviously, you know, all the players from that era, the ones who I still see now up at the ground, you know, it's still... makes me go a little bit nervous when I see them, when I walk into the room and Martin Chivers is there and Pat Jennings is there, and I try and keep it cool, but for me it's a massive moment again every time I see them, even though it's every other week. But as I sort of got more interested in football and understood it a bit more, Glenn Hoddle was the player for me, late 70s and most of the early 80s. I think mostly everybody who knew anything about football, and especially Spurs people, wanted to be Glenn Hoddle.
That's fair to say, it's true. Out of interest, David, for you, what was the pathway that took you to Tottenham, and when did you actually sign the schoolboy forms?
Dad was approached by a scout after I played a county game up at Roehampton, playing for Surrey, and the Tottenham scout approached my dad after the game. And obviously, as I just said, he's a Spurs fan, so he could barely contain his excitement. The scout approached him and said, would I fancy coming up for a trial in the school holidays up at Cheshunt? And we did that. Dad drove up. There was no M25 in those days, so we drove up straight through the middle of London and up the A10 to Cheshunt training ground, which was a magical place. And it's still sorely missed now, even though we've got an incredible training ground. Cheshunt was Tottenham as much as White Hart Lane for me. And the trial itself was a daunting thing for me. There was, you know, about 60 boys there, London boys, big strong lads. And I'd not really seen the like of that down in leafy Surrey. And it was terrifying, to be honest. I'd somehow got through the trial and got invited back to regular training. And that was when I must have been about 12 at that stage. So training regularly at White Hart Lane in the old ball court on a Monday night with Robbie Stepney and Ron Henry, and legendary coaches they were, and great men. And that developed into then Tuesdays and Thursdays. And at 14, you get, if you're still in their plans, you get asked if you want to sign associated schoolboy forms, which keeps you attached to the club from 14 to 16. And then at 16, obviously, you get the decision whether they're going to take you on full time.
Did you have a chance to join anyone else as a kid, or was Tottenham the only offer there as such? Because I'd have thought Chelsea and such would have been strongly scouting in those particular areas as well, and Crystal Palace and things like that.
Yeah, Crystal Palace was certainly one club who my dad spoke to. Once I was at Spurs, obviously, there was I wasn't interested in going anywhere else, didn't want to be anywhere else. Dad was quite careful anyway. He didn't really let me play 11-a-side, and there was no small-sided football back then, of course. He didn't want me to play 11-a-side at all, really, and just wanted me to play and have fun. And it was kind of against his wishes that I played for my first 11-a-side team at age 10. And he didn't really want me to, because he didn't think it was great for young players' development to go play on big pitches, big goals, and an 11-a-side. And it obviously ahead of his time, Dad, because he's completely right. You know, it's not a great way to develop playing on great big pitches with those sort of great big goals and stuff like that. So he was right, but then all my mates were doing it, so I wanted to go and do it. And in the end, we just did it, and that followed on with school football and stuff like that, district and county, and then to Spurs. So there were other clubs around, and obviously the local clubs, the more localish ones. There's not many around here, to be honest, and sorry, but ones you mentioned were all around and had scouts. But once I was at Spurs, I wasn't interested in going anywhere else.
Those early 80s were a real boom for Spurs, with FA Cup wins, a UEFA Cup win. And of course, 85 for me is still the title that we should have had that got away from us. Joint top with 13 games left, 9 of which are at home. But we end up finishing with Everton winning the title that season. But as a youth team player at the time, when the club's having such great success, does that make the route to the first team seem even harder and more problematical for you? Or do you have that enthusiasm of, I can't wait to join this type of side?
We had a lot of homegrown players in that team, if you recall. From 84, 85, you had the likes of Gary Brooke, and then Ali Dick was coming through, and Richard Cook. Paul Miller was already in the team, and Glenn, of course. So there was Chrissy Hughton, and a lot of really like homegrown players. Mark Bowen was in and around the team, and Mickey Hazard, and lots of really good quality. So it always gave you hope that, you know, these players had all come through and were all getting a chance. So, that's all you ever want to do is get in the first team. As soon as you understand football, you want to play in the first team and play with your heroes. So, it didn't look a million miles away, to be honest. Once I went full time, I really took off. I flourished being full time. Some people, it doesn't suit them so much, but for me, it really suited me. And I think the strides I made in my first 5 or 6 months full time were massive. And I went from being someone who definitely wasn't first pick to be an apprentice. I was probably about 5 or 6 down the line, but I got an apprenticeship. And after about 5 or 6 months, the club offered me a pro. They obviously recognised how quickly I'd taken to being a pro, to train every day, and offered me a professional contract just after my 17th birthday.
Dave, you made your debut February 22nd, 1986, away to Sheffield Wednesday. Coming into a team as a young striker that hadn't won or even scored a goal in its previous 6 league games, did Shreve see you as almost a kind of last resort or a try anything selection?
Possibly, yeah. I don't think necessarily last resort. I'd been in and around the squad quite a bit without getting any minutes. And I think Shreve and John Pratt, who was his assistant at the time, again, were very, very happy to bring young players through. Both of them had been youth team managers at the club. And so they were aware of the quality of the young players that Spurs have always produced, and so they're very keen to get players in. But as you rightly said, we hadn't scored 5 or 6 games, so obviously hadn't won. It was a real tough period, and so I think they just looked into the youth team as I was still a youth team player there, still scoring lots of goals, and said it's about time, give them a chance. You know, what have we got to lose, almost, yeah.
The team that day, Ray Clements, Paul Allen, Mitchell Thomas, Gary Mabbott, Paul Miller, Steve Perryman, John Giozzi, Mark Falco, yourself, Gary Stevens and Chrissy Waddle. So there's some big personalities in there and some big internationals. But just how big an influence was Stevie Perryman and the standards that he set for young players at the time?
Massive. Stevie was not just captain by name, everything, example of how he trained, how he played, how he conducted himself. He was a proper leader, proper players man. You know, he would go into battle for the players with the club, at the hierarchy at the club, for things that the players deserved and should be getting. And he was just a magnificent captain. I think he says that he learned a lot from the captains who he played under and who he saw around the club. People like Dave Mackay and Alan Mullery, who were all great leaders of men. And Stevie was an absolutely magnificent captain. Great, great player as well. But, he full of encouragement for younger players as well. Just a great guy to have at your club.
It always amazes me, 864 games, and he never gets a vote in our best ever, you know, players when these polls are done. And you think he was good enough to play 864 times, but he's never in these greatest sides. I find that amazing.
He was in mine.
Good.
Good enough
he's
for us.
Definitely in my world.
Dave, we finally won and you scored on your debut. You justified your selection, and then you don't play again that season. How frustrating was that, given the successful debut?
Yeah, it was quite frustrating. As I was a youth team player. Glenn Oddle didn't play at Sheffield Wednesday. It was a snowy, icy pitch, and Glenn had a bit of a knee injury, so they didn't risk him. He was fit for the next week's game, which was at home against Liverpool in a live TV game. So it was quite a big deal. Glenn came back into the team. And I was sub. There was only one sub back in them days, and I was the sub. We lost to Liverpool, and I didn't get on. But I think we then went on a really terrific run and didn't lose for the rest of the season, if my memory serves me right. Or had a really good run anyway, and I didn't get back into the side and never got back on. Didn't play again until the next season. So yeah, it was frustrating. But the other side of the coin was I was still very young, and. Really, I was just delighted to have been able to get that game that season. It was miles ahead of when I thought I'd be involved in the first team.
Peter Shreve leaves that summer. David Pleat takes over, and we have that season which sees Clive score 49, Nico Klassen also joins that season. We play some fantastic football that season. Play 57 games, another cup final. But for yourself, there's just that one appearance, which was a 0-0 draw at Luton. So is there a feeling now that, is there still that frustration that you won't get a chance? Or is there still the belief that, no, keep working hard and that chance will come through?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm still a young player. That was a bit unfortunate. You know, the system changed and we're playing one up front. Clive was injured for that Luton game, and I think it was the only game we missed all season. And I played up front on my own. I'd never played up front on my own. It was a completely alien thing to me. I don't think I had a kick, to be honest. It was the game just bypassed me.
Luton were a decent side then as well, weren't they?
Luton were a good side, and that 0-0 was a fair result. But you know, I didn't have a sniff at goal, and it was frustrating. And I think because they were playing that system, that kind of put David Pleat off me pretty much for the rest of the time he was there, to be honest, because he'd obviously found a system that worked with the players he had, and the fact that I'd never played as a lone striker went against me, to be honest. And no one's going to break in past Clive anyway, because he just kept scoring. But it would have been nice to have been in and around it a bit more.
It was Terry Venable, Dave, that following the sacking of David Pleat, that showed some faith in you. Again, following that 9-game league run without a win, with a few sub appearances, but you did start the Boxing Day game against West Ham, a 2-1 win, your first appearance at White Hart Lane, and what a fixture to play in. What did you think of that game?
That was the Luton game in the under David Pleat was at White Hart Lane as well, so that was my home debut.
Right, okay.
So the West Ham game was at Luton, one was 0-0 and was a bit of a damp squib. In terms of nothing really happened. So it was nice to play in a full-blooded London derby against West Ham on Boxing Day. They're the sort of games that you really want to be involved in. And I had a really good game. As you said, we won. We beat them well. And that was more like it for me, you know, to be part of that sort of that performance and that victory at home with the fans. And I felt like a proper Tottenham player after that.
And that was a bumpy ride as Terry had come in, rebuilding the side. And I remember you coming on in one of my most haunting memories of Spurs at that time, that infamous FA Cup defeat at Port Vale. And perhaps much like today, it just highlighted the problems at the club and just how far we'd actually slipped from those early 80s. And here we are just in 87 and we're being knocked out of the cup by Port Vale and struggling in the bottom half of the league.
Yeah, it was a terrible day. I mean, the conditions were ripe for an FA Cup upset. You know, a team, a first division team, not playing with any sort of great form. New manager going to probably a Division 3 were they at the time. As you just said, was awful. It was just, you know, just completely, the mud was coming up over your boots.
I think they flooded the pitch and it was the middle of winter anyway.
Yeah, they didn't need to do anything with it. It was dreadful. But, you know, listen, they deserved to beat us on the day. We didn't play well. And they adapted to the pitch better. They weren't a bad side. I think they had a young Robbie Earle in their team and a couple of other players who went on and had good careers. So, it was a proper learning thing experience for me and for a couple of the other young players involved. I think Razor Ruddock might have been involved. It was a real eye-opener. I hadn't really been part of anything like that before. Obviously, when you're playing for Spurs or whatever level, whether it's reserves, youth team, you expect to win every game. And when you don't, you're disappointed. But when to play in a high-profile game like that and get turned over and become a bit of a laughing stock and receive all that that goes, you know, it's a real eye-opener to that side of football. And I've not been involved in anything like it.
And there you are, 2 years after you'd made your debut, but you've still actually only started 6 games at that stage. And so how soon does the doubt come? And do you start thinking of a move away or do you still keep that belief 2 years on that big opportunity will come?
Well, as you said, Terry Venable's taken over by this stage. And I think if Pleat had still been there, then I would have moved on sooner. Don't think Fleet was ever the type of manager to put faith in players coming through from the youth team. He wanted to sign players. He wanted to bring players in. And the turnover of players when he was manager was vast. It upset the rhythm of everything. I think he lost Glenn. Glenn was probably going anyway, to be honest. But Clive, lots of young players, like you just mentioned earlier in the chat, people like Ian Crook and Mark Bowen, the underbelly of the team, the players who would come through and you know, he sold a lot of them as well. A lot of them left the club. And so proper Tottenham players, you know, proper Tottenham people who, it's, you know, those guys come through and they're the natural successors to people like Glenn Hoddle. And I think Fleet was reluctant to give them chances and actually sold a lot of them, made a lot of signings that didn't quite work out. So Terry was at the club by the time the period you're speaking of, and Terry would speak to the young players a lot, encourage us a lot, and you know, I wouldn't necessarily say, right, I'm going to give you a chance, but he'd say, if you keep your head down, you've got a chance. If you don't fancy it here, you can go, no problem at all. He said, I can get rid of you, no problem, or you can get your head down because I think you've got a chance. And that was the message that I wanted to hear, you know. And I really enjoyed working with Terry, and I think most of the players who ever worked with him would say the same.
12 more substitute appearances day followed as we broke the UK transfer record to sign Paul Gascoigne that summer. Paul Stewart also joined, one of which you saw score the eventual winning goal at home to Middlesbrough. But it wasn't until January of that season that we actually got on an actual run, starting games. Did you then start to feel, Dave, that you were becoming a genuine first team player?
Yeah, probably that was my breakthrough season. I think I started to play. I was always a midfield player, as most of the lads are, to be honest, at school and district and county and your Sunday team, because that's where the best players play, in midfield. But at Spurs, I was always a striker for some reason, just always was. We were short at Highbury in a reserve team game, and Doug Livermore asked me if I could play in midfield, and I said, well, yeah, I'm actually a midfielder, so yeah, of course I can go and play in midfield. And to be honest, that was pretty much it. I never really played up top again. Did well in midfield, learned to be a bit more responsible in that role than some of the other players. And to be honest, that's what you have to do as a young player. You have to find a way to get into the team and stay in the team. And I would have played anywhere and did play in a lot of different positions. And then the idea is, obviously, once you play in a position and you make yourself very hard to leave out, and then obviously the form of the team helps. And as you said, we went on a good run towards the end of that season. I was in the team and I pretty much stayed in from then.
Yeah, I can remember that run. One of those games was a famous 5-0 win at the Old Den, which for us fans behind the goal is probably not the best venue to go and win 5-0 at, I can assure you.
Yeah.
After the game, it wasn't the easiest time to get back to New Cross.
Terrifying place.
Terry Hurlock and all that there in those days as well. Oh, it's an awful place, Millwall. Yeah. But that summer, of course, you'd had the excitement of the arrival of Gary Lineker coming in from Barcelona. And yes, Tottenham were able to go to Barcelona and buy top players those days. But we also sadly lost Chrissy Waddle to Marseille that summer. But another player that arrived was Pat van den Hel, or Psycho, as he was affectionately known. Just how tough was Pat? And did you ever think you'd see him become a front-page celebrity during his time with Mandy Smith?
He's a good character, Pat. Scary, is he? You know, I think he was a lot of posture. He was a bloody good player. You know, I think he was a good player, good defender, decent right-footed left-back, who no one used to get the better of him. He was good going forward. Just a good player, but yeah, good lad, good character, a bit mad, a bit crazy, but I liked Pat a lot. I had a lot of time for him.
He got sent off in that Luton game, didn't he? Which actually turned Paul Stewart's career really round at Tottenham, because I think Stewie dropped into midfield and scored twice that day. But I can remember that foul thinking, oh, that's red card. Because we had, I think Naeem had been sent off that day as well. And ended up beating Luton at home. But yeah, he was a tough boy, Pat. But we definitely made progress that season, finishing third, although we weren't really in the title race. Gary Lineker scoring 24 times in his first season, the ultimate penalty area goal scorer. But that's vastly different, isn't he, from modern day number nines?
Yeah, you could say that. I'm sure Lineker was good enough to, he would have adapted whatever he needed to be. He would have been. I think he probably, his game changed during his career, and he did what he had to do. But as far as an actual goal scorer, he's probably the best that I played with. Lee for one-on-one, he'd rarely miss. If he, you know, if he didn't score, he'd get brought down for a penalty. He was as good as I ever saw one-on-one with a goalkeeper. And when he needed a goal, he would more than likely come up with one. I think his other all-round play was a little bit underrated as well. Now, I remember him being decent with his back to goal. He would show up and get involved with the build-up. It wasn't just about being in the box. I think he was better than a lot of people give him credit for in that area.
Dave, 1991, fair to say this was your best season, both individually and being part of a Spurs team. Although little was done in the way of transfers that summer, only the late Justin Edinburgh arriving, with Gazza dragging us through the early cup rounds, including that win at Portsmouth and a supposed easy quarter-final at Notts County. But to all of us, those semi-final memories will live on forever. What was the feeling like of that first cup semi-final at Wembley against that lot from down the road, who were a great side then, league champions just losing the once and ending their hopes of yet another double?
Yeah, I mean, we'd played them twice in the league. The game at Highbury was a bit of a non-event, 0-0. And at White Hart Lane, we absolutely battered them. We really, 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 really played well and got the better of them. And if it wasn't for Seaman, we'd have won the game comfortably. He was outstanding. So we had that belief that even though, as you mentioned, they'd virtually won the league by then anyway, we knew that we could definitely get the better of them. You know, if we'd have taken our chances on that day, we could have won 3 or 4. We could have won comfortably. So we had no fear. We obviously respected them massively as a great team with a great manager, but we felt like we had the tools and the players that could really hurt them, as long as we could set up properly and stop them from scoring.
Gazza, of course, he was injured during that quarterfinal win, and he was rushed back for the semi-final. How much belief was there, Dave, that going into that semi-final, you know, and did that really hugely increase with the return of Gazza for that?
Yeah, definitely. You want your best players, and he was obviously our best player. He was an incredible player, Gazza. Nowhere near fully fit, but you'd still have him out there. He'd been carrying the hernia for a number of weeks before the quarterfinal, and they were patching him up and sending him out. And I think it coincided with our dip in league form. We'd started the season really well, and we were in amongst it after about 12 games, right up there in the top three and challenging. But that form fell away in the league after Christmas, and that was a lot of that was down to the fact that Gazza was carrying this injury. But he was incredible that year, really absolutely incredible, dominating games as much as I've ever seen an individual player dominate them. He could literally win a game virtually on his own. He was outstanding.
How good was your view of that free kick? Because we tore Woolwich apart, didn't we, inside those first 10 minutes, 2-0 up, but the free kick, I can remember being behind it because it was, we had the tunnel end at Wembley, our supporters, and it was down the far end, and just the sight of that pinging into the top corner was something joy. And then just how nervous was those next 70 minutes, because they really came back at us strongly, didn't they, before Lynx got the sealer on the break.
I kind of claim an assist for the free kick for Gazza's goal, because this is just like I said earlier about playing any position you're told to. I was fulfilling a role on the left-hand side of midfield that day, because we'd worked on their fullbacks and trying to stop them getting forward. And so I was playing on the left of five in midfield, trying to stop Lee Dixon getting forward and occupying him. And Paul Stewart's playing midfield, played the ball out to me, and he overhit it slightly, but was caught quite late. So he's pinged out and he's going over my head. And I spotted that he'd been fouled and heard the whistle. So I caught the ball and ran back in, and I spotted it for Gazza. And I think Gazza, first of all, was just going to clip it into an area. And I said to him, what are you going to do? And he said, I'm not sure. I think I might just clip it in, whip it in. So I said, no, just smash it, mate. Just smash it. And Lineker ran back from behind the wall and said exactly the same. He said, just smash it. He said, anything could happen. Just smash it. So Gazza takes this, like, Bob Willis-style run-up, about 20 yards run-up. And I'm just following him, thinking, well, you know, I could take a deflection, could come off the, could bounce off the keeper. So I'm following him, so I don't actually see him strike the ball. But I see it as it passes the wall, it kind of whistles past my ear into the top corner. And obviously that's the stuff that the legend's made of. Mm.
And your famous assistant to the rest of your day.
Exactly, yeah, so I'm kind of claiming that.
Why not? I mean, then came the final, the huge Gazza injury, going behind from the resulting free kick. And to make matters even worse, Gary Lineker sees a penalty saved by Crossley. At half time, how much had the confidence taken a dent with seemingly everything going against us so far in that game?
Yeah, we'd had a goal disallowed as well, which shouldn't have been. And yeah, you're right, everything had gone against us. We'd lost our best player, our talisman, you know, the man who'd pretty much single-handedly got us there. But there was a lot of concern for Gazza in the change room at half-time. You know, he wasn't there. He'd gone off to hospital straight away. So lots of concerned people just asking, how is he? What's the news? Terry Venables was brilliant, as he always was, and was calm. And said to us, look, you know, you can go one of two ways here. Everyone's going to expect you to fold like a pack of cards because you've lost your man. He said, I believe in you. He said, you know, you're all top players. You're here for a reason. It's a real opportunity for you to go and prove to everybody that you're not a one-man team. You can do it for him. You can find whatever reason you want to do it. But, you know, this you've got, well, as it turned out, we had extra time as well. But he said, you've got half of football now that could define your careers. So there was no tactical master strokes or anything like that. We actually changed a couple of bits on the pitch ourselves. When Gazza got injured, Naeem came on and played in Gazza's position. We changed that a little bit and moved him out to the left of the midfield. And it actually gave us a bit of a better balance because I was playing up against Nigel Clough. That was my detail in the game to try and nullify his effect. And it made us a bit narrow. And I think that their fullbacks were having a lot of joy getting forward. Gary Charles, for instance, on the edge of the box when Gazza fouled him, got injured. Obviously, Stuart Pearce doesn't need a lot of, or didn't need a lot of improvement to get forward anyway. The great attacking fullback. So it actually helped us in a way. You know, obviously, you want Gazza on the pitch, an amazing player, but just making that little tweak. And that's where it's important to have leaders on the pitch, players on the pitch who can spot things like that. It didn't come from the manager. It came from me and Stewie in the middle there and Gary Mabbott as well. So we just tweaked it a little bit and then it actually worked out well for us and we ended up having a nice balance and a shape. But we actually played really well. As you said, you know, we got a penalty, which goal we saved and we should have equalised when it wasn't offside. And so, yeah, we felt we'd played okay and we felt we were pretty, you know, we were very much in the match. And so we didn't need to change too much. And I thought, again, second half, we went out and played ever so well again and dominated extra time as well.
Yeah, and it was Stewie, of course, who got us that deserved equaliser with a really well-taken goal. And then karma for 1987 with Gary Mabbott's own goal giving Coventry a win. It's as fate always seems to do it. Gary forces Des Walker into an own goal to win that trophy. So what's that feeling like when that referee just blows a final whistle and you go up what was then the famous stairs to lift a trophy? And of course, you have the obligatory open top bus ride around Tottenham the following day.
Yeah. So it was all amazing memories. I didn't know it was an own goal. I didn't realise it was an own goal until much later. I thought Mabsy had scored because I challenged for the ball at the near post and it got flicked on. And I didn't see how it had gone in. I just saw it had gone in. So I'm thinking, I was actually thinking he hasn't made much of a celebration there. If that's me and I score what looks like the winner in extra time, I'm off around the stadium. So it did surprise me a little bit that Mabs hadn't celebrated so much. But then obviously later on I learned that unfortunately for Des, he'd got the final touch. I remember at the final whistle just sinking to my knees and just thinking, thinking of when I was a boy, really, about cup finals and how much they always meant to every schoolboy who used to get up early Saturday morning and do
the biggest day of the season, wasn't it? Cup final.
Yeah, it always
meant to win the cup in the league.
Yeah, always was. And I just quickly thought back to that and then just thought of my family up in the stands and how they must be feeling and friends. And then, you know, going up the steps, I thought, I'm going to get near the front here because they always show that picture of the captain lifting the trophy. So I want to be quite near the front to always be in that picture. So I wormed away in behind Eric, and it was Mavsy, Eric, then me. So every time that gets shown, I'm always as a 22-year-old me in the background with a smile on my face.
Hello and welcome back to The Last Word on Spurs, joined by the brilliant David Howes here for this special Last Word on Spurs show. Dave, I want to ask you, the end of that season that played out in very strange circumstances, news of Gazzaniga to Lazio emerging and Spurs appearing to be in real financial trouble with Robert Maxwell seemingly to the main buyer for the club. What was it like at that time, and did you feel an extra pressure during that cup run because of all of it surrounding what was going on?
I think it was clear to the players that there were financial problems, but Terry Venables was brilliant and never mentioned it, never spoke about it. It wasn't, you know, he shielded us from that sort of thing very, very well. It was clear that the deal had been done for Gazza. He knew that the cup final was his last game. And we were all quite concerned as to, you know, our futures and the future of the club, of course. You know, so very, very strange times. As you rightly mentioned, Maxwell was mooted as the potential buyer, which, goodness me, I mean, you know, in hindsight, such a great thing that he didn't. But, you know, it was just very strange. We couldn't understand it. We couldn't understand how it got to that. You know, I knew Irving Scholar very well and had a terrific relationship with him. He was such a massive Spurs fan as well as the chairman. But, you know, it was obviously a few or more than a few business decisions had gone awry. And, you know, it was a mess. It really was a mess. And that summer was it was very strange, actually. And I think we probably should have seen from, you know, as you said, at the start of 1991, we should have been investing in players. We should have been strengthening the squad. We had the potential to challenge for the league title, but we didn't make any signings. Justin came in on loan and then signed halfway through the season. But if we could have added a couple of top quality players at the start of 1991 season, you know, I think we could have been challenging Arsenal and really been in amongst it. But that was obviously, looking back at it now, that was a sign that the money wasn't there to do that. So that's why we didn't.
And during that summer, of course, Terry eventually teams up with Alan Sugar to buy the club. I'm not even sure by then if that's the same year that Robert Maxwell tumbled off the boat, famously. But financial security is restored. But Terry took a lesser role, didn't he, in the team. And Peter Shreve came back in, taking over as manager. And that then became a bit of a struggle league-wise for the rest of that season.
Yeah, indeed. I obviously knew Peter Shreve very well. Terry asked me about Shreve. I think obviously Terry's idea was to move into a more director role. And he asked about Peter Shreve. And obviously, you know, Peter is a Spurs man through and through and a wonderful coach and a great character. I don't think it really suited him being the manager, to be honest. And so it didn't really work out. As you said, you know, the league form that season, I was injured a fair amount that year. We had a run in the Cup Winners' Cup where we were a bit unfortunate to lose to Feyenoord over two legs. But it was a season of missed opportunity, really. We felt like Gordon Jury was a great signing, I thought. Did we really make the most of him? No, not really. I thought, you know, again, if we could have just strengthened in a couple of other places, then we could have pushed on again. But, you know, it's classic Tottenham, you know, a season of missed opportunity, a season of rebuilding. You know, these seem to happen quite a lot with us, and that was certainly one of them.
And we have Forrest again in a... in the semi-finals, I think, the League Cup that year. Forest was strange, isn't it? Because we always seem to go to Forest and either win or draw. They always seem to come to White Hart Lane and win or draw. We could never beat them at home and they could never beat us up there. But the second leg, if I remember rightly, was delayed for several hours with a bomb scare closing the stadium.
Yeah, surreal, absolutely surreal. We were sitting on the bus out by the library, just opposite in the corner, a bit by where the old Spurs shop used to be. Sitting out on the bus there for a couple of hours, just waiting for the okay to go back in and play the game.
Yeah, soaking wet, people outside the ground, absolutely torrential rain, if I remember rightly, that day as well. Worst possible day to be stuck outside for hours.
Yeah.
Of course, Dave, as well, I mean, that saw your only taste of European football as we faced, I think, Stockerau, if I'm pronouncing that right, and Hajduk Split. Porto in a memorable 3-1 win at the Lane before the defeat to Feyenoord. Do you regret being unable to play more European football? And how does that kind of make you feel in terms of different to what the European nights are to the normal domestic games during your period at the club?
Yeah, like you say, we had a memorable game against Porto. Feyenoord was a great atmosphere, and if we could have just nicked a goal, I think we'd have gone and won that. But we would have qualified for the UEFA Cup when we finished third. I don't have regrets as such, because if somebody told me when I was little that I'd played 335 times for Tottenham, then I'd have snapped your hand up. I'd have taken one. I'd like to have played more European games. They're magical nights. You know, I remember being in the crowd in 1984 to lift the UEFA Cup on your home ground. You know, it's just incredible. And that, the atmosphere that night was as good as I can remember anywhere.
And that summer, 1992, saw the arrival of two players who'd become massive for Tottenham and England, both Darren Anderson and Teddy Sheringham. Arrived that summer, so it kind of suggested Spurs were ready to go into the market, bring in some big names, although we lost Gary Lineker that summer. And we finished top half, but we had to deal with yet another FA Cup semi-final defeat to Woolwich. Just how painful was that at Wembley 2 years on from such a high of beating them?
Yeah, horrible. I mean, I had a funny injury in that season. We played Leeds away early in the season. Leeds were champions and Cantona was still there. And 0-0 at half-time, doing all right. And then it was the year the back pass rule came in. And Eric Torsved didn't like that. It didn't suit him at all, the back pass rule. Anyway, he got caught on the ball. Rod Wallace scored just after half-time. And we ended up losing the game 5-0. Cantona got a hat-trick, I think. And towards the end of the game, he's showboating a bit. And I'm thinking, oh, this is it winding me up. So I tried to leave one on him. Ended up kicking the bottom of his boot and broke my foot. So... I missed about 4 weeks with a broken foot, came back, played, and everything was fine, and we were having a good cup run. And we'd beaten Wimbledon at home in a feisty game, bit of a grudge match. And funnily enough, in the home return game against Leeds, which was just in between, just leading up to the quarter final, which was away at Man City, I was just jogging across the ground, and I felt my foot click, the same foot that I'd broken against Leeds earlier. I just felt it click, no one near me. And it turned out that it had never healed, actually. It was a non-union, so I had to then have an operation. I missed the rest of the season. And that obviously included the semi-final against Arsenal, the one we lost. And that was so frustrating, being at Wembley that day on crutches, because we were better than them. We had a really good, exciting young team and didn't deserve to get beat, to be honest. And it was a hard one to take, especially from the sidelines.
Dave, that season also saw the off-field battle start between Alan Sugar and Terry Venables. How difficult was that time with the players who presumably most of them sided with Terry?
Yeah, of course, yeah, because we'd met Alan Sugar a couple of times, but didn't really know him. But everybody loved Terry, you know. Terry was the manager, and the big reason for a lot of players being there was Terry. So, of course, nearly all the playing staff would have sided with him. When they're asking people to take sides, you know, we knew and really loved and respected Terry. So that was the way the players all felt about it. Well, that's right or wrong, it's difficult to say, but that's just the way, you know, you're going to, as a player, I think that's just the way it's going to fall. there were obviously reasons why Alan Sugar felt that Terry had to go. And you know, it's just another real shame because, as I just said, we had a really good young team, exciting young team that was looking like it was going to really take off, and with the right sort of additions and the right sort of leadership, it really, really was exciting and a team that could have just grown and grown throughout that decade.
It feels almost like the current scenario, Dave.
Well, no, it's something that happens to us regularly.
Yeah. So that summer, Ozzy comes in to replace Terry. But the season starts okay, but then Teddy picked up a terrible injury. Just a few weeks after we'd sold Gordon Dury on, and we then played 24 games. We only win 3 of them, failed to score in most of them. We absolutely plunged down the table and become embroiled in a relegation battle. And probably the most important goal of your Spurs career, a second goal in that 2-0 win at Oldham, as we win our penultimate match, which, had we lost, results on the last day would actually have sent us down. And that's got to be the most tense game you played him. And I'm sure you'd probably think that's probably the biggest goal you scored for us.
Yeah, it was a big goal. I'd missed a lot of that season for injury as well. I think my injury kind of mirrored Teddy's in terms of when and how many games I missed. And I came back into the team in maybe the last 6 or so games, and we were struggling. You know, confidence was low, it gone. And it's a real struggle when you get into a rut like that. It's very, very difficult. Having said that, we went to Oldham. That it was a rearranged game. We'd gone up there earlier in the year, and I think it nearly always snowed up there or something. So the game was called off previously, which actually turned out well for us. We went up there, I think it was a Thursday night game, live on Sky, and we really fancied it. They were in big trouble as well, and we knew that if we beat them, it would send them down pretty much. So it was quite, you know, if it had been a game against a team with nothing to play for, it probably would have been even harder. But I feel turned the pressure on them, and we won quite well in the end. But yeah, it was a big goal, second goal. Enjoyed it.
Dave, Jürgen joined that summer, a huge coup for the club. What were the big differences in his game compared to Teddy's and Gary Lineker's?
Yeah, that's interesting. Jürgen was sharp all around the pitch, made clever runs. It's different, very different to Teddy, in that Teddy would drop it into pockets of space, whereas Jürgen would always look to run in behind. His movement in the box when the ball was in wide areas just to get a yard of space was similar to Lineker's. He was fantastic in the air. He had everything all round, you know, stronger than you probably give him credit for physically. No problem physically with the game, could deal with defenders in that side of it. But he just the all roundness of him as a player was outstanding.
Well, as Jürgen coming in, we also signed the Romanians Gica Popescu and Ili Dimitrescu after they'd starred in that a fantastic Romanian side in the World Cup. And an exciting team was being formed, the famous five, but it quickly unraveled with defeats at Leicester and home to Forest 4-1. 5-2 defeat at City was followed immediately by a 3-0 horror show in the League Cup at Notts County. Just how difficult and demoralising was it to have so much talent in the side and yet appear so chaotic at the time? And did Ozzy do any defensive sessions in training?
No, he didn't. And that, you know, Ozzy's a great guy, really great guy, and a brilliant coach as well. Actually, and you know, still to this day, we speak about it, and it's fine. Steve Perriman was assistant manager, and I know Steve was quite frustrated because, as you said, you know, the group of players we had. It wouldn't have taken much, and didn't take much really to turn it into a really effective team. And it was a shame really, because Ozzy, stubborn is the wrong word, but you know, his principles are his principles. We trained him, was very relaxed. He would give the players great freedom to express themselves while playing, but there wasn't a plan B. You know, a lot of our play was off the cuff, and when it's good, But when you know, it's not always going to be good, and you always need a bit of structure to your team for when you're not on total form. So, you know, even looking at the great teams now, Man City and Liverpool now, they're not outstanding every week. Liverpool, for the last couple of months, really ground out a few results, but that's because they've got a structure. They've also got brilliant players, and when they're all on fire, it's a real thing to watch. And that was like us, but we didn't have that structure to fall back on, and that was a real shame, because I would have loved Ozzy to have been successful with that group. It would have been fantastic. I was out of the team, and it was frustrating for me, because I kind of felt and I knew that I could bring something to that team in terms of organisation, in terms of a disciplined midfielder. And I honestly felt that my presence in the team would make us a more successful team. So it was very frustrating for me.
But the security in the side came when Jerry Francis took over, and Jerry actually turned it around pretty quickly, and we went on a great run. And we spoke to Darren Anderson just a few weeks ago, and he himself said the biggest disappointment of his Spurs time came that season with the semi-final loss to Everton after we'd won that famous quarter-final at Anfield. Is that also your biggest disappointment in terms of a single game at Spurs in that time?
Yeah, without a doubt. It hurt a lot, that one. Just going back to Jerry coming in, as I said to you about Ozzy, it didn't need much. You know, Jerry came in and there was a lot of fuss made at the time about, we're doing these terrible Tuesdays and doing a lot more running. And yeah, we did do a lot more running in training, but actually it was just about, just focusing on just a little bit more on tactics, a little bit more on shape, and a little bit more on how to defend as a group, as well as going forward. And what we still had was the freedom of the players that Ozzy brought in, and that flair, but just coupled with a bit of realism from Jerry and a bit more of a pragmatic approach. But we still had all that flair, and very quickly, as you said, the results turned around, and the win at Anfield was one of the best performances I've been involved in, one of the best games I've been involved in. I was involved.
Best birthday present I ever had, I think that was.
It was amazing. Yeah. Just a brilliant game, and that's one of the great places to play football, and to play like we did and win was a thrill. Off the back of that, the semi-final, as you said, was awful, was just dreadful. We didn't play great. I think it was a bit of a stitch-up from the FA, in fairness, having to go and play at Leeds, which is not really a semi-final ground. Everton have three sides of the ground, and it felt like an away game.
That's exactly what Darren said, wasn't it, Rick?
Having said that.
Darren said the same thing.
We didn't perform, and that's the really frustrating part.
It's fascinating, like I say. It's fascinating on that. Dave, Jurgen was sold to Bayern that summer, but Teddy formed a decent partnership with Chris Armstrong. But perhaps it was stung by Jurgen's departure. It was a period in which Alan Sugar became suspicious of high-profile overseas signings, and that started a real mediocrity for Spurs, which, to be fair, it's taken years to recover from.
Yeah, I agree. It's a shame. You know, Chris did a decent record, but as well as we didn't sign anybody to replace Jurgen Klinsmann. You know, Chrissy Armstrong came in and did well, decent striker. But the other lot got Bergkamp, and there's Zola's coming to Chelsea, and those sort of players are about. We the club that should have those sort of players is Tottenham Hotspur, and we didn't. And that
Carlos kicker, weren't they, David?
That pragmatism that we spoke about with Jerry was fine when it was mixed with the flair of the Aussie team, but the more flair you take away and the more pragmatism you put in, it becomes stale and boring. And I think the players sense that. The likes of Teddy would have seen that and felt that, and I think that would have been a lot of the reason why Teddy went to Manchester United when he did. The fact that he couldn't see Spurs kicking on, we weren't signing the sort of players that Spurs should be signing, and it was difficult. And as much as I love Jerry, I've got a lot of time for Jerry Francis. I think that his style wasn't the Tottenham Hotspur style, and the success that he had was because of the players that he inherited and the flair that Ozzy had. And then that mixed in with what Jerry gave it was a brilliant recipe. But the more it went towards the Jerry team, it was less and less like a Tottenham Hotspur team.
Mm.
Dave, you were still at the club in 1997 when Christian Groves took over from Jerry Francis. After we went on a run of just one win in 11 games, we were coming broad in yet another relegation battle. Despite the arrival that season of Ginola and Ferdinand, you were to start only 3 league games under Groves. Was that purely down to injuries? And how difficult did the players find it under Christian Groves, who seemed very early on to kind of lose the dressing room, clashing with Gary Mabbott on a few occasions? And we actually spoke to Ramon Vega as well, who, to be fair, he also said that Christian Groves, that period in charge, it was a very, very tough time for the club, where maybe any manager would have found it hard to come in at that time.
It wasn't an easy job to walk into, that's for sure. I don't think he helped himself. He fell out with Jürgen and with Gary Mabbott quite quickly, which, you know, it's quite difficult to fall out with both of them because they're both great, great people. And I don't know how he managed it, but he managed to fall out with both Gary and Jürgen quickly. And that's not going to do you any favours when you come in and you want to be successful straight away. Listen, some of his coaching was fantastic. A lot of his training was brilliant and new, and you could see that there was stuff there that we'd never done before, and you could see that it was good stuff. And a lot of the training I enjoyed very much, but I just don't think he knew how to deal with the players. And you can see straight away that it wasn't going to work for him. Pretty quickly, you can see that it wasn't going to work for him. I think he was a bit unlucky. He wasn't able to bring in his number two for quite a long time, and that didn't wouldn't have helped him. He might have felt quite lonely in the role to start with.
But, he did have a tube ticket, though.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if he'd have gone on and won the league title, that would have been everyone would look back and say what a genius stroke that was. But because it didn't work for him, it looks a bit of a... It's just a bit of a comedy thing now, but I only started 3 games under him, mainly because I was injured when he first arrived. But I think that I don't think he was fancying me anyway, and that was obviously the reason why I left at the end of that season, because they'd offered me a new contract, which I wasn't overly happy with anyway. But the realization that I wasn't going to be part of his plans made me realise that I was going to have to leave.
That was going to be my next question. Well, that last appearance for you came against Everton on April the 4th, 1998, and you just answered it. I was going to say, did you realise that was going to be the end of your season, or was you still looking forward to a pre-season?
No, I think by that time I realised that I wouldn't be at Tottenham next season. Just purely, as I said, because the manager made it quite clear that he wanted Gary Mabbott and Jürgen and myself. I think he was. It's fair enough. You come in and the team wasn't exactly flying, and so he probably looked at him and thought, right, I'm going to try and freshen it up. And so, now I'd been there 12 years, and Mabsy obviously longer, and Jürgen, who is a massive part of the club. He probably thought to himself, right, I need to, these are the people I want to either phase out or sell or just try and do without. So that's fair enough, and that's what managers have to do. I hold no grudges, and I'm not bitter about it at all. I didn't want to leave. I still felt I had something to offer, but it was just that was the situation, and unfortunately I had to start thinking about what to do next.
And you moved on to Southampton. Although you only actually played 9 games for them, but the Spurs in you were still present when your only goal for Southampton came against Woolwich. And is it just a sweet playing in scoring against them, even though it's with a different club?
Yeah, it was brilliant. Obviously my best moment for Southampton was scoring the equaliser in a 1-1 draw against Arsenal at Highbury. And there's 2 things I claim from that. Southampton stayed up by 1 point that season, so I claim that as the point that I got at Highbury, but also Arsenal lost the league by 1 point as well, so I claim that as well.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Dave, you eventually moved back into grassroots football with your hometown club, Guildford, and I also believe some time you spent with Havant and Waterlooville. Was that coaching roles you were doing there?
Well, Guildford one, yes. Guildford's my hometown, as you rightly said, and it many years ago had a senior football club which went defunct in the early 70s, and I was involved in trying to get it going again. It was quite difficult. They had no ground, and it was a bit of an uphill battle with the council, but the club's going. It's in combined counties. They're doing all right. I'm not involved anymore, but I was involved at the beginning trying to get them going again, and played a few games for them as well, which I enjoyed. Having a Waterlooville, I went down there as a favour for my brother was playing there at the time, and the manager Ian Baird, who's a good mate of mine, just asked me if I'd go and play. I played one game, broke my collarbone, and thought that I'd better not do that anymore.
Was that Gareth who was there then?
Yeah, Gareth.
Of course, he was at Tottenham as a kid as well, wasn't he?
That's right. Yeah. Gareth was goalkeeper. Didn't play in the first team at Spurs, but was there a couple of years. Signed pro. Played over 100 league games for Torquay. Had a good career non-league. Played a lot. Gareth did. Yeah, had a great career.
And of course, you're still a regular face on match days at White Hart Lane. And of course, he was in Madrid. But if you could change the outcome of one of your playing days or that match day in Madrid, which one would you choose?
Oh, match day in Madrid. I mean, crikey. The build-up to that, the 3 weeks that we had, I mean, I know, I don't think it probably did us any good from a playing point of view. Nor them in Venice, but 3 weeks we had just dreaming that if we won it, it was just sensational, just thinking we could be the champions of Europe here. And so... if we could change that outcome, then that would have been the one.
And Dave, before we kind of go to quick fire questions, I've got to ask you, you have played at that new stadium. What was that like for you playing on that Legends event?
Absolutely incredible. We all had the most amazing day. Least of all, just seeing all the lads together, seeing Gazza, who was on great form. Just amazing, really. To be able to do that at 52... to be able to play in front of a crowd like that, just to be able to do that was such a privilege and an honour. Just amazing, really.
Got some quick fire questions to finish up on. Is that okay if we just quickly do these? So these are one word answers. So, favourite ever game?
Well, it's Arsenal semi final, 91.
Best goal?
Best goal?
Yes.
Seldom seen on TV volley against Burnley at home in the League Cup. I think it was about 93.
Brilliant, fantastic. Favourite away ground?
I used to love playing at the Dell.
Okay.
I'm probably going to say Anfield.
Okay, fair enough. That's fair. Player signing that you were most excited about?
Yeah.
Okay. Player we should never have sold?
Chris Waddle.
Okay. And a player you thought will become a manager, but never did or hasn't yet?
Teddy, probably. I know Teddy's had a go, but I still think Teddy could be a very, very good manager.
Okay. I know Jason's got an interesting query to ask you, so I'm going to hand over to Jason. Jace.
Yeah, we're gonna quickly pick the dream team of players you play with. So your manager, you can have Shreves, Venables, Ozzie, Francis or Gross.
Yeah, Terry Venables.
In goal, we got Clements, Torsfit or Ian Walker.
Ray Clements.
You got Chrissy Houghton, Gary Stevens or Stephen Carr at right back.
Really?
Could also, how many games did you play with Stevie Perryman?
Well, probably just the one, my debut. I only played a couple of, maybe once with Glenn Hoddle as well. But, yeah. It'd be hard not to have Glenn. Defensive, tricky one, left back. Probably, did you say left back or right back?
Right back. Goodney Bergson would have played quite a few games at right back as well.
Can I abandon now? He played right back in the cup final, didn't he? With Justin at left.
I think he did. So, in which case, we'll go with Mitchell Thomas or Justin Edinburgh at left back then.
I'll go with Justin. God bless him.
And you got your centre halves. You can have Mabbott, Sedgley, Razor Ruddock, Ramon Vega, Chrissy Fairclough, or any of the other ones you'd have gone for. What was your pairing?
Yeah, well, obviously Gary Mabbott. I thought Richard Gough was a fantastic player. I know we don't talk about Sol Campbell, but if he hadn't have left the way he left, then Sol Campbell would be in there as well. But I'll go for Richard Gough and Gary Mallett.
And then you're in the centre of midfield, and you've got Ozzie or Mickey Hazard or Gazza alongside you.
Gazza, of course. Have I got to play?
you're definitely playing. And in this side, mate. And if Gazza's alongside you, we might need that the little bit of defensive nous as well in there. On the right wing, you got Paul Allen's or Stevie Hodges or Darren Anderton's.
We'd have Darren Anderton, definitely.
Going with Darren. And then on the left side, you got Chrissy Waddle or David Ginola.
Waddle.
Go Waddle. Right, okay. And then your final one, you've got your two strikers. You got Lineker, Sheringham, Klinsmann or Ferdinand.
Yeah, difficult that. Very, very difficult. Crikey. Very tricky. You can't leave Teddy out. So Teddy and... I'll go for Teddy and Jürgen. Lineker. Very unlucky.
So we'll leave Lineker on the TV doing the panel job.
Oh, listen, David, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you so much for letting us relive your time at the club. Thank you once again for joining us.
Absolute pleasure, lads. Cheers, mate.
You've been a star. Jase, thank you as always.
Yeah, pleasure speaking to somebody that played 287 times for us, and I would have seen a hell of a lot of those games. So it's always nice to talk to the players from my era, that's for sure.
Listen, David, we wish you all the best, and fingers crossed life gets back, if it can do, to some kind of normality in the very near future.
Yeah, best wishes and love to everybody. Sports Social
Podcast Network. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.